Hello, this is Angela Ewing with KCIW, Curry Coast Community Radio, Writer's World. Today, Lon Goddard is here to read a short story written by Jim Grangene. Lon is a well-known actor and musician in Brookings and has played in live theatre for many years. He also has regular gigs at various music venues around town, including the Second Saturday Art Walk. Jim Grangene is a writer of short stories that you can find on Kindle or Amazon.com. The Golden Arm is a baseball story. The setting is in the office of the Tallahassee Knights Baseball Club. Mike McCutcheon is reminiscing about his baseball days in the 1950s. There is one story he clearly remembers to this day. So let us begin. The Golden Arm, written by Jim Grangene and read for us today by Lon Goddard.
Some people say life isn't fair. Others say luck discriminates. I say it's like sitting down to a steak and a beer. You eat the steak when it's hot, and you drink the beer while it's cold. I'm Mac McCutcheon, pitching coach for the Tallahassee Knights. There are 3 days I'll never forget in this life. The day I got married, the day I got unmarried, and that warm, lazy afternoon when Wes Caulfield walked into the office years ago. It was late April. The days were already thick with humidity, and the early evening stacked with bruised and swollen clouds. The colors of spring were unraveling everywhere. Al Cronin was sitting behind that big desk of his, and I was sitting across from him. He was the manager of the Tallahassee Knights. I was his pitching and catching coach. He was drinking coffee, as he often did, even at that time of the day, and I was sipping on a warm Dr. Pepper. We were going over that spring's rosters and rotations, evaluating every player's weakness and strength. I'd been with Al for 7 years, so I was both familiar and comfortable with his occasional sour expressions and cynical moods and dry humor. That day, he was beyond his typical pessimism. It was quiet and somber, as if something besides baseball was chipping away at the back of his mind. He looked at a list of our pitchers and rubbing his forehead. "What about Parker?" he finally asked. "He'll be late," I said. "He just got married." "If she's anything like my ex, he'd have been here already." "You ever talked to Maggie?" I asked. He snorted and shook his head. "Okay," he said. "I've been thinking about going with a four-man rotation." He picked up a sheet of paper and gave it a short rattle and leaned forward. "Well, worth a try," I told him. I was reaching for the paper when Al paused and cocked his head and looked past my shoulder. At first, I thought it was an expression of contemplation. Then I realized he was looking at something behind me. When I turned around, Wes Caulfield was standing framed in the doorway, a worn Rawlings glove tucked under his arm and a pair of cleats hanging from his shoulder. He looked like a skinny lost kid. His clothes were too big, his sneakers were faded and frayed, and if I had to guess, I would have said he used half a tube of Brill Cream to lacquer back that thick hair of his. For lack of a better expression, to me, he just looked plain scared. "What can I do for you?" said Al, flexed brow not relaxing in the least. Wes looked nervously around the room and then stepped inside. "Mr. Smith from Butte County said I should come down here and talk to you." A tired look crossed Al's face. He looked at me and then back at the kid. "Okay, you're down here, so now when the hell are you?"
"I'm Wes Caulfield, sir. I was pitching up there in Butte County for Turkle's Hardware."
I looked him over. How old are you, son? Was a question he seemed uncomfortable with.
18, sir, but I'll be 19 here real soon.
That's good, I told him. Al had been absently fiddling with the marble base of a broken trophy he used as a paperweight. He tapped the desk with it, and then he put it down.
Son, I'm all positioned out here. You came all the way down from Butte County?
Yes, sir.
And how did you get here?
I rode the bus, sir.
Al shot me one of his looks, leaned back in his chair, and then he turned back to Wes.
I see you brought your gear.
Yes, sir.
And you rode the bus here?
Yes, sir. Didn't I already say that?
Al let out a tired breath. Right. Well, we'll go ahead, then.
Go ahead where, sir?
Up to the field. Loosen up. Throw some pitches, I guess.
Yes, sir.
Finally, given a directive that made sense to the poor kid, Wes couldn't get out of the room fast enough. I looked at Al, who was just shaking his head. God damn, Smitty's getting old, he sighed. He pushed himself up from his desk. Hell, Mac, the last guy he sent us, that Gonzalez kid, why, he wasn't even legal.
Yeah, but he had pretty good instincts, I said.
Well, he also knows our budget is capped, so what the hell is he doing this crap for?
I don't know, maybe he sees something in this kid.
He could see the next goddamn Ty Cobb, and we couldn't afford to pay him. Well, what the hell, let the kid throw a few, then we'll put him back on a bus with a story to tell his grandkids.
I left Al to his paperwork and walked up to the field. I remember it was slightly wet with rain. I could smell charge of electricity coursing in the air, dying sawdust and the freshly painted bleachers, and somewhere in the distance the chlorine smell of wet concrete.
Wes was standing alone along the backstop fence. His glove was hanging from his left hand, and the look of a lost child was stamped across his face.
"Why aren't you throwing?" I asked him.
"They all look pretty occupied,"
he answered, nodding to the 20 or so scattered players, playing pepper and casually tossing baseball back and forth.
"Here," I reached into a duffel bag and pulled out a catcher's mitt and flipped him a ball. "Just remember, this ain't the game 7 of the series."
Yes, sir.
"And Wes?"
Yes, sir.
"Everyone else around here calls me Mac."
Yes, sir. Yes, Mac.
He walked back about 60 feet, wound up, and tossed in the first pitch. For the next 10 minutes, we just played catch. Yeah, what I noticed about the kid was his natural fluid motion and perfect mechanics. Fundamentally, he could have had one of the smoothest deliveries I ever seen.
"Can you take it up a notch?" I asked.
He'd been throwing nonchalantly between 70 and 75. Back in those days, we didn't have radar, but after catching for 13 years, 4 in the majors and 9 in the AAA, I was a pretty good judge of velocity. He nodded, and then with some effortless delivery poured in a fastball that easily hit 90. For a moment, I left my hands stinging.
"Is that your high end?" I asked, now a little more curious.
"Oh, no, I'm pretty sure I can do a little better than that."
I looked behind me. A group of infielders were doing a pepper drill. I thought if one of these balls got away, somebody could get hurt. So I told Wes to take the mound. With a security at a backstop, I crouched down behind the plate. The next 3 pitches burned in at about 90, and then I made the mistake of asking him to show me that little better something. It started with the same coil and wind-up and kick, the rotation of his hips, the balancing and transference of weight, except this time his arm snapped like a whip. I could actually hear the painful slicing of the air as the ball rifled into me, and before I realized it, the pitch was over the outside corner of the plate and tailing away. By the time I got my glove out, the ball was past it and flying off the backstop wood. Al had come out onto the field and was standing in front of the dugout talking to Jimmy Maynard. The ball whistled past him, missing his thigh by about a foot. He didn't have to say a word. He just
shot a look and that said it all. Another dozen fastballs that I know were at least in the mid-90s, because, like I said, I'm a pretty good judge of ball speed. The last one had so much movement it ticked off the web of my glove and almost hit off it a second time. By now, Wiz had Al's attention. He had mine a long time before that. "Let's see your curve," I said. I got down on my crouch and gave him a middle-of-the-plate target. Again, an effortless motion followed by an almost poetic release. The ball came in high and inside, and then at the last moment snapped off dramatically and sliced across home plate. I tried to backhand the diving ball, only to have his pitch skip off the heel of my glove and roll harmlessly towards Al in the dugout. I walked out to the mound, trying to sort everything I'd seen in the last 20 minutes, keeping in mind that throwing at me was one thing. Throwing at a batter that could ring one off the top of the scoreboard was something else. "Any other pitches?" I asked him. "Yes, sir." "Wes, it's Mac."
"Yes, sir, Mac."
"Well?" He held the ball out in a hand that looked delicate enough to play a piano. "I reversed my grip," he said, as he turned his fingers towards the inside of the ball seam, "and then I spin it out this way." "And what the hell do you call that pitch?"
"A screwerve."
"A what?" An off-balance expression twitched his face. "My dad taught it to me, kind of like a screwball with a lot more break." "Okay," I nodded and walked back to home plate. I got down on my crouch, this time up on my toes, ready for anything, and I gave Wes the target. Without a hint of rotation, the ball whistled in so far off the plate that I just gave it up as a wild pitch, only to watch it radically change direction and plunge downward across the plate, hitting just in front of my left foot. I straightened up and hollered at Bobby, our bullpen catcher, who was warming up Laramie, our closer. "Catch Wes a minute," I told him. "I gotta talk to Al." Al was leaning back against the fence. His face was shaded by the brim of his cap. "Well, Mac," he said, "that kid's either got an arm or you're over the hill worse than I thought." "He's got an arm," I said. Al took out a sack of Red Man, packed his mouth, and he handed me a pouch. "Have him throw in some live wood and we'll see just what kind of arm he's got." I called Bobby over and told him to put on his gear. "Kid's got some pop, Mac," he said. "Yeah, I know." "Hey, Mac, my hand gets busted. I still get paid, right?" "Get dressed," I told him, "and while you're at it, tell Butch to grab a stick and get up to the plate." Lars Anderson, or Butch as we like to call him, could hit a ball a country mile. A previous year, he banged out 32 homers. If it wasn't for his poor fielding and perpetual inability to exercise good judgment, he would have been called up to the show a long time ago. Rumor had it the local betting circles were wagering on exactly how far Butch would hit a ball this year. If anyone could serve up that distasteful plate of humility, it was Butch. We watched Butch grinning like a drunken hyena, swaggering up to the plate. Bobby was down on his crouch and moving around nervously. Wes, still in his street clothes and looking like a lanky scarecrow, stood motionless on the mound. Butch dug into the soft, wet dirt and waved his bat, and then a moment of gregarious humor came over him and he pointed to the bleachers in the left field and raised a chuckle from some of the players who had stopped doing what they were doing to watch. Al shouted across the field, "Butch, use the bat for the reason we bought it." Butch spat and cocked the bat to his shoulder. Jimmy made it to come across and was standing with me and Al. I couldn't help thinking something bad was about to happen. Wes wound up, pushed off and through. The pitch whistled in low and way outside, kicking up a cloud of dirt. Bobby tossed out another baseball. I could hear Jimmy Maynard next to me chuckling. Wes' second pitch was high and outside. Bobby didn't even come close to getting his glove on it. Ball hit the backstop like a rifle shot and then rattled off the cyclone fence down the line. "You'll never hit that one," Al muttered. "Send him back to the farm," Jimmy laughed. "Let me talk to him." I shoved my hands in my back pockets and walked out to the mound. You okay? I asked.
Yes, sir.
I looked around at the empty stands and then back at Wes. I said, I know this guy's big and strong and can hit the ball out of the county, but I also know something else. With the stuff you got, get that ball over the plate and you'll strike him out 9 times out of 10.
Wes had been staring at the ground. Now he looked up, studying my face.
Yeah?
Relax and concentrate, son. Throw at the glove just like you was throwing at me.
I won't let you down, sir.
Wes, it's Mac. I don't know why, but I put my arm around his shoulder and smiled. Save that screw, or whatever you call it, for your strikeout pitch. I started to walk away, then turned around. Wes?
Yes, Mac?
He's a sucker for high heat. The next pitch was a searing fastball on the outside corner. Butch took a vicious cut and came up with nothing but air. The next four pitches ended with the same result. In 24 pitches, the best Butch could manage was a crippled ground to the second, a weak fly to left, and a couple of foul balls. When Wes eventually threw the squirve, Butch was so tangled up in his swingy, all he could do was just keep from falling over. Al turned to me, shaking his head. Let's go get a steak and a beer over at Tully's, he said. Jimmy Maynard had stopped laughing. Al and I sat back at one of the tables at Tully's. The smell of marinated wood and cigarettes and stale bourbon and oblique conversation drifted into the room. Al had brought his notebook and was thumbing through its pages. I'm letting you run the show tomorrow, he said.
Okay.
I'm going to go see Bernie, Al said, see if I can squeeze enough money out of that cheap bastard to sign this kid.
You think you can talk him into that?
Al picked up his beer and looked at the glass and shrugged. Well, with the economy and this war going, I just don't know. We finished our steaks and ordered more beer. Al lit a cigarette and leaned back in his chair. By the way it was acting, I knew there was something circling around on his head. I changed the lineup, he said, tipping an ash over what was left of his dinner. I moved some of the players over to the B squad and to the A, and I took out Jimmy Maynard. I'm starting the kid. Basically, what Al did was move our entire first string of starters over to one team, making sure that Wes would face the toughest lineup we could hand him. If Al was going to stick his neck out, he needed some assurance. He could always go back to Bernie and say it didn't work out. Wish me luck, Mac, he said, getting up and dropping a 20 on the table. And that I did. By the time Al got to the park the next day, the inner squad game was over. It was the first time I ever seen Al dressed in a suit, and he didn't look too comfortable. Did you see Bernie, or did he get goddamn married again, I asked. Well, I don't know which is worse, he sighed. I got a contract. It was like pulling goddamn teeth, but I don't think I'd sign it. So, Mac, how did the kid do? I'd say you had an easier time of it than those hitters. 5 innings, no runs, 1 hit, and struck out 9.
Not bad, Al nodded.
You sort of adopted this boy, huh? Now see if you can talk him into this. And he handed me that contract. Al was right. It was hardly anything. $600 for the season and $300 cash signing bonus. The kid could make as much as that in a gas station. Maybe more. At the end of practice, I asked Wes to meet me down in the office. I was reading over the contract when he walked in. He looked about as nervous as I ever seen a man.
How would you like to play for the Knights, I asked him. Play baseball for the Knights?
That's just what I said.
Well, heck yeah, I would.
He was smiling like a kid on Christmas morning. Here, make sure you read this, I said as I handed him the contract. He took it from my hand like it was a baby bird. I gotta be honest with you, kid. It's not the best offer I ever seen. He read the short document, mouthing the words. When he was finished, he laid the contract down in front of me on the desk.
Where do I sign, Mac?
Son, that's $900 for the whole season. That's 8 months' worth.
Yes, sir, I know.
And that's okay? He cocked his head and smiled timidly.
The way I see it, you and Mr. Cronin are going to pay me to play a game I love, and I don't want to live without it. Heck, Mr. Mack, plenty of days here playing for Turkle's Hardware, I ain't never even made a dollar a game. The way I see it, it's beyond good fortune to get this. And now where do I sign?
Wes signed his contract, and I put it in the drawer. When I told Al, he just shook his head.
You know, that thing's about as airtight as a fishing net, I said.
Al shrugged.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that.
I got a feeling he'll probably find out, I said. Well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Right now, we got a season to get ready for.
So we opened in New York against the Titans and dropped 3 in a row. They lit up our starters like pinball machines, and we made 6 errors in one game. The only bright spot was the Butch hit 2 bombs that might still be up there.
Our next was against the Houston Wildcats, the toughest team in the league. The Wildcats have won the championship for the last 3 years and had 4 of the biggest bats in AAA. If Detroit hadn't been so overloaded with hitters, every one of those guys would have been called up for sure. A standing joke around the league was that even the Yankees were afraid of these guys. Of course, that wasn't true, but it tells you how lethal these boys were. It was on the bus just before we got to Houston that Al told me he was going to start Wes that first game.
Nothing like throwing the kid into the fire, I told him.
It was a night game, and not a pleasant one. The air was thick and gritty with humidity. Clouds of tiny phosphorescent insects swirled in the infield, and the incessant hum of invisible mosquitoes was everywhere. Recently, there had been a fire in the area. The stadium lights burned out into the night, a dull, sickly corona of rancid-looking light that made you cough just to look at it. The entire situation was ominous, without a doubt. It was going to be a long night. We knew it, and we were not looking forward to it. When Wes walked the first batter, it was like the visage of doom. Thinking back now, how that game unfolded and the events that took place gets me shaking my head even to this day. After walking the first batter, Wes struck out the next 2 and then jammed their biggest bat into a dribbling grounder the second that even a little leaguer could have handled. Wes ended up pitching 7 strong innings, allowing only 2 hits, no runs, and striking out 11. We won the game 2-0 and ended up taking the series 2-1. By the All-Star break, we were 7 games over 500. First time we'd done that in 4 years. Wes was 5-0 with an ERA of 1.43 and averaging 11 strikeouts a game. He even made the cover of Dugout Magazine, a AAA rag that not many paid attention to, but was still considered a compliment when you hit the cover. You would have made the All-Star team too that year, except you signed up late and missed getting out on that season's ballot. Al and I took that 5-day break just hanging around in the park, eating over at Tully's and doing a little office work, but mostly talking about fishing. We were discussing the best waters for largemouth bass when Wes knocked politely on the already open door and walked in.
Matt, can I see you for a minute?
Al and I exchanged glances. I remember how stiffly Al sat up before he asked what he wanted.
I'd just like to talk to Mac in private.
I looked at Al, and Al looked at me. If my expression was anything like his, he knew I was just as worried as he was. Sure, Wes, I said, got up from my chair, not even wanting to look at Al again. Where do you want to talk?
Is the field okay?
I followed him down the tunnel and up to the ball field, the whole time thinking about what it was I was going to say to change his mind about what I was certain he was going to tell me. We were halfway between home plate and first base, a slight breeze that smelled like cut grass feathered across the diamond, and to the east a bulkhead of swollen clouds stacked up against a jagged skyline of downtown.
First, I'd like to thank you and Mr. Cronin for everything.
he began. When I heard those words, I knew it could only get worse. How much, I asked, unable to hold it back any longer. How much did they offer? What did their attorney say? A confused look hit his face.
Who? What offer, Mr. Mack?
The Yankees, the Dodgers, Detroit. Wiz, how sweet was the deal? Wiz just looked at me blankly, shaking his head.
I never play baseball for anybody except the Knights. You guys are my team. You've been like family to me. Honest, Mac, it's not that. It's not that at all.
Well, then what is it? He rubbed the back of his neck as if it was stiff and cleared his throat.
I went to the movies the other night and I saw a newsreel about what's going on over there in Korea. It made me mad. It made me do some thinking about this business with them Chinese and how I'm playing here baseball while kids are sitting in some other country's mud and getting shot and killed. If the Chinese get their way with things, we might not be playing baseball here ever again. Our country's in a fix, Mr. Mack. And the way I look at it, it needs me more than I need to play this game of baseball, much as I love it.
I felt a sad numbness into my body, balanced by a warming measure of kind of pride. So, what are you going to do?
I already done it, Mac. I've enlisted in the Army, and I report to basic training next week.
What could I say? I couldn't argue. Al and I served in the last war. It just hurt. That's the only way I can put it. I respect your principles and your decisions, son, I told him. I don't know why, but I put my arm around his shoulder. This war is going to be over someday, I said. I expect to be seeing you out on that mound again, pitching for the Knights, when it is.
I'd like nothing better than that, Mr. Mack.
Well, neither would I, Wiz. I told him he didn't need to tell Al. I'd do that. We shook hands and said our goodbyes. As he walked away, I noticed something different about the way he straightened his shoulders, like he knew finally where it was going and he wasn't afraid of it. I didn't see Wes again, not until 9 years later. We finished that year 9 games under 500. Wes's leaving took the wind out of our sails, so to speak. It was like the team just decided to settle for mediocrity, and it did. Al finally retired in 1960. I ran the club at the beginning of the 61 season till we got a new skipper out of the Giants system named Andy Morris. Andy was a nice guy, but a little too much of a disciplinarian for my standards. At the beginning of the 63 season, I told them it would be my last. That year, at the close of the season, we were 14 games over 500 and second in our division, so maybe there was something to be said about Andy's rigid structure. Even so, I couldn't see any sense in staying on. As far as I was concerned, it was time to do a little duck hunting and some lazy bass fishing. We just closed out the last home series. I was in the office packing up some personals. It was a late Sunday afternoon. As far as I knew, I was the only one there. I was emptying my drawer, thinking how funny it was that I could fit 15 years of my life into just one box, when I heard a familiar voice address me over my shoulder, a voice I recognized instantly.
Hello, Mac.
It was Wes. I turned around. Wes was standing framed in that same doorway, much like he'd been some 10 years earlier. For a moment, I couldn't say anything. I just had to let everything settle. Then I smiled like I hadn't smiled in a long time. Wes, goddamn, son, where you been? What have you been doing? Wes lifted up that broad, simple smile of his, and he said,
"Raising a family."
Damn, I wondered what happened to you. We all did. When did you get out?
I got out in 56.
56? I started to say, why didn't you come by? Then Wiz turned and walked into the room, and I saw why we hadn't seen him sooner. Where there was once a hand of gold, a hand that could burn a fastball in the high 90s, or drop a curve like it was falling off a table. There was now a stainless steel prosthetic hook. He shook with his left hand and didn't seem put out, apparently comfortable for all practical purposes with his disability. Damn, son, I'm sorry about the hand, I eventually said. Don't be sorry, Mac. I came home better off than lots of them other fellas did. Oh, maybe I'm sorry for selfish reasons, I said. Not being able to see you pitch again. Maybe that's my regret. I just always thought... He laughed and nodded understandingly. I have a son, he said, smiling. When he gets old enough, I'll bring him down and you can watch him pitch. If he's anything like you, he'll be one heck of a ball player. Takes after his mother, but his curve's got a good little break to it already. Well, I'm damn near done here, I said. How about going over the Tully's and having a beer? He thought about it for a moment, the idea playfully skipping through his eyes. No, he laughed. I better not. I should really be getting home to the family. I just wanted to come by and, well, see the place again. I nodded and smiled. Get that boy down here, Wiz. I will, Mac. And Mac?
Yeah?
Thanks. Thanks for what, son?
For understanding, Mac. For understanding that there was more to the world than just playing baseball.
I watched him turn and walk through the door and into the hall. I sat down on the corner of the desk and waited till the fading echo of his last footsteps long turned into empty silence. I picked up my old catcher's mitt, the one that had caught Wes's first pitch that day so long ago in the sunshine, and I tossed it into the box with the rest of my gear. I looked around the office for the last time. I turned off the lights and walked down the hall and out the tunnel. Yeah, he'll be a heck of a ball player, I thought with a smile. I looked out at the autumn evening, falling in long soft waves, the first ignition of scattered stars, a flattened reef of pale clouds, and I realized that despite everything, Wes had managed to pitch that perfect game after all.
You have been listening to Lon Goddard reading The Golden Arm, a short story written by Jim Grangene. This is Angela Ewing with KCIW, Curry Coast Community Radio. Thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed this program, please consider becoming a founding member. For more information, please go to our website at kciw.org. Thank you.